We just got out of Health and Human Services.
You weren't talking about Minsure, were you?
I just turned the mics on, Senator.
So, 2, 7, 8.
Mental health.
We're on.
Yeah.
We're on. Okay. So we're going to call this meeting to order. Good afternoon, members. They're in state and local government. We have a few bills before us. And I understand, you know, we have this issue with schedule that we have to move from one room to the other very quickly. And I understand Health and Human Services and others are just now wrapping up. So we're going to have to start with you, Senator. So we're very happy that you're here and we can start on time. So, Senator, we have Senate File 617. And please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Senate File 617 is a Military Spouses and Appreciation Day. A few states already have formal occasions to recognize the contributions of military spouses, but what this bill does is create a day of recognition for a veteran's whole family. The children who often have to move when their parents change bases, the parents who dread hearing that knock on the door, and the rest of the vet's extended family support network. Veterans Group recommended tying the holiday to the Thanksgiving weekend, extending our thankfulness to our veteran spouses, children, parents, and extended family. The day after Thanksgiving has been firmly established in the public's mind as Black Friday, the day to kick off your Christmas shopping season. But veterans groups would also like Black Friday to be the first official day of recognition for the spouses and families of military veterans. The thought was that this was a perfect time of year to recognize the importance of family bonds. Our military spouses and families embody ideals we cherish, strength, loyalty, and commitment. They stand beside those who stand behind our flag, giving their all and making tremendous sacrifices. They shoulder the burdens of our countless moves and stressful deployments, and they uphold their end of the bargain. On Military Spouses and Family Appreciation Day, we would celebrate the forces behind the force and show these Minnesota heroes the full support of all of us back here at home. I have two testifiers. I don't know if Mike McKellen is here. So we will go to Richard Glasgow. Is there someone can pass these out? Thank
yes,
you.
Definitely.
I'm going to have you read it, Richard. This is Richard Glasgow. He is a veteran and a board member of Dear American Hero. And you're going to read it, Richard. Do your thing.
Thank you, Senator. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Glasgow.
Thank you. I tell you, it's quite an honor to speak on this subject. Back in 2006, we started... Back in 2006, I went to a meeting with Chaplain John Morris on Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Was a kickoff, and that has exploded throughout the United States now. In that meeting, an Air Force sergeant and a lady said to us, "I've been back 3 years now, and when somebody thanks me, I get this feeling I just can't describe." The very next morning, I was with Senator Brian LeClaire, and he said, "What can we do to keep this going, this feeling?" And I came up with the cards that are in your little packet there, and military family. The first card was for the veteran, and the second one was for the families. And the families, the two pictures on the front, one is a young girl from Minnesota. The other one is from Fort Riley. His dad had that card on his Humvee all through his tour in Iraq. To date, I've given out over 6 million of those cards and over 6,000 of those challenge coins that you have. It speaks to, I'll read the back of the card, which to me...
I was going to ask you to please do that for us.
Yeah. I want to thank you for the sacrifice you have made to preserve our nation's freedom. Your long nights, lonely days, times of fear, hours of worry, and seasons of stress are not unnoticed by those of us who enjoy freedom. This card has been a godsend to the families and to the veterans. I can tell you stories. I could be here for 2 hours telling you stories, the effect these cards have. Where can you get a something that costs less than a penny, and it touches your heart, and you get tears in your eyes, and they carry it in their billfolds forever. I'll tell you a couple of quick stories. One friend of mine, who was a very outgoing lady, her son was deployed. The minute that he was in Iraq, she told her family, do not ring my front doorbell, do not enter my front door, do not knock on it. You drive in my driveway, you shut your car doors very quietly. You come through the back door and make no noise. She was so scared that knock on the door was going to come, and she was just panicked. She never left her house, basically, for 14 months. She got to the point where she would put her cell phone in a Ziploc bag and take it in the shower with her so she would not miss a call from her son. That's the sacrifices our families go to. I was in the Sears parking lot, and as always, I seen a little sticker in the back of the car. It says, my daughter's in the Army. So I knocked on the window, and I went to give him these cards, and he says, well, my daughter's in Iraq with my son-in-law. They're both deployed right now, and these are their grandchildren. But these are my grandchildren. The grandparents take over, once again, the sacrifices. One other story, quickly. A good friend of mine, her husband, was 22 years and flew Blackhawks. His unit was being deployed to Iraq, but they didn't have a flying slot for him, so he says, I'll just retire then. 3 months after he retired, and this friend of mine got her husband back after 22 years, they call him up and says, we got a flying slot for you. He went, re-enlisted, and went to Iraq. For 14 months, she was in just panic mode, take care of the family and everything. When he came home, she called me up after a week. She says, I don't know if I can put up with this. That isn't the same guy that I sent to Iraq. He's not home. He's still in Iraq. It took about, I think it was 6 to 8 months before the family really got together again. When I hand these cards out to the veterans, they say constantly to me, it's my family who's making all the sacrifices. Please thank them. It's not so much me, it's them. So with Military Family Appreciation Day, you will be touching millions of hearts all over Minnesota and recognizing those sacrifices. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Glasgow. We so much appreciate that you are here, appreciate your service, and appreciate that you are taking the time to be a voice for the families. And I'm thinking about the appropriateness of Thanksgiving Day. A lot of families actually do come together, and that's the time of the year where we come together, and it makes sense that we will celebrate these families exactly at a time when we come together as a nation for the celebration of our family. So I appreciate that. Senator Pappas, do you have
a
question?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for this. My husband is a veteran, and I'm sure he'll enjoy receiving it. Madam Chair, I had a little question, though, about separation of powers, and that is on line 1.9. I'm not sure if it's appropriate for the legislature to say that the governor shall issue a proclamation. That maybe it would be more appropriate and to say may issue a proclamation, or is requested to issue a proclamation, or something to that effect, whatever Ms. James thinks is appropriate.
And I'm sure you know the governor's will.
I'm sure
that would not be a problem. Senator Housley, would you be in agreement with that? Would you like to offer an amendment, or how do you?
What does Ms. James think, Madam Chair? She probably had.
So, Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
Ms. James, yes. We were talking about giving a mandate to the governor directly as a shall, and so Senator Pappas is suggesting that we should use a different word, perhaps.
Madam Chair and members, it's a good issue that Senator Pappas raised. So we would delete shall and insert is encouraged to.
Is encouraged
to? Be.
Okay. Or there's many options, so if there's something else.
Requested?
Okay, sure.
Requested to.
Yeah, it's a little stronger, I think.
Yeah, thank you.
I'll make that motion.
Okay. So, Ms. James, could you read that for the record, please?
Madam Chair, members, on line 1.9, delete shall and insert is requested to.
Okay, members, are you clear on that?
Okay.
On that motion by Senator Pappas, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted. Any other questions, members? Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wonder if the author would be open to an amendment that would say something like, and Minnesotans are requested to fly an American flag that day.
Madam Chair, Senator Hall, nice choice of words. Request, I'm open to that, yes.
Ms. James, do we have any, I don't know about procedures for
Madam Chair.
Adding language like that. Senator Pappas?
I would say, in this case, encouraged. That,
okay. Sure.
That Minnesotans are encouraged
sure.
to
okay.
fly their flags.
Any particular place that... Okay, so Ms. James, could you read that?
Madam Chair and members, on line 1.9 after the period, insert, residents of the state are encouraged to fly an American flag.
Or wear on their lapel.
Okay, Senator Hall. Don't go that
or
route.
Or American ideas. Or have an American flag
going.
Tie. Or scarf.
Madam Chair.
T-shirt.
The or wear on the lapel actually came from Mr. Glasgow, so I motioned to Senator Hall saying or wear.
I don't think we can do that, but I think that they will not. Just if you could read again the amendment, that would be good.
On page 1, line 9, after the period, insert, residents of the state are encouraged to fly an American flag. And then are you? Do you
no,
want
I think
about
we'll
the
I'll
stop leave
there.
It to the,
I think we'll stop there. Yeah,
period.
To the author.
Well, Madam Chair, maybe it could be more generic language than fly American flag or wear, just kind of display the American flag or, you know,
maybe
just
display.
Display,
yeah, like
encourage
cover both
to display.
So we don't have to. Cause some
American
people
if we start with that, we can then see if we want to change it. We've got plenty of time.
Okay, so we're going to use display for now and then we will continue the conversation. Please, Ms. James, repeat the amendment. Okay.
Page 1 on line 9, after the period, insert, residents of the state are encouraged to display an American flag.
Members?
Okay.
So Senator Hall moves that amendment. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Any other comments, members, or questions? If not, Senator Housley, if you would like to move your bill.
I would like to move Senate File 617 to pass.
So we move. Senator Housley moves Senate File 16617 to be recommended to pass and as amended and sent to the floor.
Thank you.
All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Committee.
I believe I see Senator Gazelka is in the room. Please, Senator, welcome to our committee. We're trying to... members, we're just going to, as I said, we're going to move along the agenda as we see members kind of coming into the room. Senator Gazelka, welcome to our committee. You have Senate File 74. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I don't know that I've been before this committee in a little while, so it's good to
well,
be
welcome.
Here. Senate File 74 is called the Sentinel Landscape. Maybe that's not the name, but Act. But I want to. It's related to land around Camp Ripley. Camp Ripley currently has a program, the ACUP program, which is Army Compatible Use Buffer, where they have been in the process of purchasing land around Camp Ripley to create a buffer for their use that is voluntary with residents around Camp Ripley. That's been going on for over 10 years with great success, very few complaints, and helps them fulfill their mission. Most of those dollars come federally to help purchase those lands, but some does come from Lessard Sam's Council as well. This legislation will simply formalize a process that we've used for years to enhance the effect of the ACUB program. Establishing sentinel landscapes in state law will allow us to more effectively compete for federal funding from agencies just beyond the Department of Defense, and to better align federal and state programs that could support private landowners in sentinel landscapes. If we do this, we will be one of the early adopters of this program to compete with other bases for federal dollars. And so beyond that, I have one question about whether we have a current fiscal note or not.
Senator, we are the policy committee, so I don't know that even if you have it, we're not going to review it because you're going to go to finance from here.
Okay.
I am also aware of, I believe, does he have an amendment? No.
Yes.
Okay. Do you have an amendment, Senator?
Yeah, I have the A1 amendment that was helped to be drafted by Stephanie James basically to clear up or some clarifying language.
So, Senator, a member will offer it on your behalf.
Thank
and
you.
We need copies so that the committee can see it. So the author has the A1 amendment to put the bill in the shape that he wishes, and Senator Hall is going to move that. I'm going to wait until members have a copy and they can see it, but this is an author's amendment. So Senator Hall moves the A1 amendment. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Senator,
so Madam,
please continue.
Madam Chair, what I'd like to do is turn it over to one or both testifiers to bring more clarity to the issue.
Thank you, Senator. Please proceed and identify yourself before you start.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jay Berzink. I'm the environmental supervisor up at the Camp Ripley Military Training Center in central Minnesota. If you don't mind, I just have a short speech I'll read that kind of provides some background about the sentinel landscapes in our ACUB program. In America, there are over 420 major military installations across the country. Most of these were built 100 years ago, typically in isolated areas, away from large populations. Of course, the rapid pace of development and the economic engines that these military bases are leads to incompatible development, which in turn affects the missions and the operations of these military bases. In 2013, three federal agencies announced a new initiative known as the Sentinel Landscapes Program, Sentinel Landscapes Partnership. The intent is to help reduce the adverse effects of incompatible development. These agencies include the Department of Defense, Department of Agriculture, and the Department of Interior. They are working together to protect military readiness, to preserve working land such as agriculture and forest management, and to promote conservation on the landscape. Their goal is to focus on where these priorities overlap. Camp Ripley currently has a program called the Army Compatible Use Buffer, or also known as ACUB. Over the last 10 years, we've been working with two partners to execute the program, the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources and the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. This program is a willing landowners program. For those landowners that are interested, there are two land protection measures, either fee acquisition or conservation easement, and about 95% of those involved landowners are interested in conservation easements. This program was established in 2004 and is currently being funded primarily by Department of Defense funds, about $23 million to date. We also have additional Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council funds, about $4 million to date. The Camp Ripley ACUB program has been one of the most successful buffer programs in the nation, having completed 107 land transactions representing over 14,000 acres. The completed transactions are shown in red on the image that was provided to you. In addition, we have over 220 interested landowners representing about 28,000 acres that are interested in participating in the program pending funding availability. This level of interest is an indicator of how effective the ACUB program has been. The interested landowners are shown in pink on your image. Camp Ripley is an amazing 53,000-acre facility that has prepared our soldiers for the battlefield for decades. In addition, Camp Ripley is the largest state-owned game refuge in Minnesota. It is one of the most culturally and ecologically rich environments in the Midwest, bordered by 18 miles of the most pristine shoreline along the Mississippi River. The Sentinel Landscape Initiative can be defined as preserving the working and rural character of our private lands, which is important for both national defense and conservation priorities. In Minnesota, working lands for agriculture and forestry and other natural lands provide many important benefits, not to mention the importance of protecting the Mississippi River as a drinking water supply for St. Cloud, St. Paul, and Minneapolis. So why wouldn't we want to protect that water quality? There's also recreational opportunities for hunting and fishing, habitats for species of greatest conservation need, shoreline protection of the Mississippi River, open space, commodity production, and maintaining the rural character of Minnesota is the focus of the legislation before you. Joining me today are also other partners from the Nature Conservancy, Board of Water and Soil Resources, and, of course, Department of Military Affairs. I'll open it now for questions or comments.
Thank you. I don't know if members have visited the place, but I'm intrigued.
Madam Chair?
It'll be interesting to go see it.
Thank you.
I have not been there.
Madam Chair, you got to come. I tried to get a helicopter ride up there, but they wouldn't let me do it. But I do have a question about where it's going to be referred to, though. I know the other body initially had a fiscal note, but that has since gone away. And so I'm, if you want to maybe make some comments about that, I think that would be helpful.
Senator, we do not request fiscal notes, obviously, because that's not our jurisdiction, but it is apparently there might be a fiscal note, so it's not clear, and if there is, it probably will go to Senator Saxog, but if there isn't, we probably could clarify. I guess we are not sure, and we didn't try to clarify simply because it's not our jurisdiction anyway. My assumption is that we will re-refer that over there, and if there is no fiscal note, it will just go directly to the floor because there is no fiscal note associated with this. So, but I cannot refer it to the floor until that's clear, and we didn't ask for clarification, so that's the only reason I would not refer it directly right now. But Senator Dahl, do you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Brzezinka, I think I understand what the goal is of the kind of this buffer zone. You use the word incompatible development. Could you give an example of what is incompatible development and what would be the worst case scenario either for you or for some other military installations around the country?
Well, I use the example of the Minneapolis Airport. You know, 50 years ago it was built 30 miles away from the metropolitan area, and now, of course, it's been encroached upon. So eventually you lose the capability of that facility. Baxter, of course, is expanding from our north to our south, so trying to prevent doing smart growth planning is one strategy. So we work with the local cities and local units of government. But it's a willing landowner program, so a lot of the landowners are willing to look at conservation easement. They still own the land. They'll still be doing recreating. They'll still farm. They just can't put houses on it or development. So it's really trying to target limiting development of houses around the buffer of the installation.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that. And would you say that the landowners around there have been largely willing participants?
Very willing. You can see the pink. There's almost 30,000 acres of interest right now. It's about funding availability. So we have a lot of the county land use plans talk about maintaining that rural character. A lot of the three surrounding counties really want to maintain rural character. So not allowing a lot of that development really fits in right with the county plans along with our plans.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator.
You know, in Camp Ripley, I was going to say they blow up stuff, but it's ordinances, and so, I mean, it can be very, very loud, but they've been very cautious about where they do it, how they do it, and then they measure where does the sound go out, where is it, you know, where do we need to perhaps expand the border a little bit with willing landowners. And so I don't think I've had one complaint come to me from that, and they're very active at reaching out to all the communities and saying, what can we do better, how do we do it, and so they've been a great partner up there.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Scalzi, do you have a question?
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And I'm wondering, there's a lot of white on here, so we're assuming that all of the white area are people who are not interested in participating. Would that be correct to assume?
I don't know if they're not interested. They haven't come forward. It's a voluntary program, so we don't actually go out and market to the landowners. They typically come with our partners showcasing that they're interested. So there's a big interest. So there's quite a list right now. I think it's 369 total interested landowners. We worked with 107 already, and there's several of them ongoing as we speak, several thousand acres. So it's folks really want to maintain that rural character in central Minnesota. It fits well with the military mission and a conservation mission as well.
Questions for the testifiers? So, Senator Gasalka, we have another testifier. If you could please introduce yourself, we can take the testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs, and I just wanted to point out that this is pretty important to our agency. It's a great example of how many state agencies came together looking at mutual benefits and have worked together for 10 years in a program that actually is the model for this at the national level. The reality is that the Department of Defense folks that manage the ACUB program saw what we were doing in Minnesota by combining the funds we were getting from DOD with funds that were available from the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Fund and putting those together for common interests. And that really is where they got the idea that, hey, perhaps we should look outside our little Department of Defense stovepipe and establish this broader program across the federal government so that we can pursue funds from the Department of the Interior, the Department of Agriculture, in addition to the Department of Defense. And that's why we're adding agriculture in to the structure in this bill, because we think that there's also a Department of Agriculture nexus to this, and they have agreed that they're coming on as willing partners as well. And I think it's really a good example of how we can take something that we came up with in Minnesota with willing partners and cooperation of many government agencies, and using that as leverage to gain federal resources that we wouldn't otherwise be able to get.
Great. Thank you. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Gasalka, or to your testifiers, are there a contract that these landowners who voluntarily come forward to say we would like to be included, is there a contract that they sign in with either the Camp Ripley or to federal?
Yes, sir. There's actually an interest form that they sign that they're interested. But when they execute the program, there'll be a contract with that landowner, typically a conservation easement that they'll sign, and it's a perpetual easement on that land. So as an end result, they're not committed up front. They're just interested landowners. We actually rank all the parcels when they come available if there's an interest based on, as the senator mentioned, if there's noise, we can model the noise based on the types of weapon systems that are fired on camp. We realize that we're probably causing more noise in certain locations around the buffer of the insulation, so we'll target and work with those landowners first and foremost because we know we probably are affecting them from the military mission. So, but otherwise, there is a contract as an end result, and it's typically a conservation easement.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. And I'm just wondering, maybe one of you three can answer, if people decide that they don't want to sell, and I know that the duties of the committee would be to identify land and develop recommendations to encourage landowners to voluntarily participate. And just say they don't participate, then can you use eminent domain, or how else would you acquire this land?
Negative. They would just not be an interested landowner. So it's a willing landowner program. We're only targeting those landowners that are interested in some type of protection of the helping protect the military mission. But a lot of landowners have that conservation ethic also. So again, it's strictly a willing landowners program.
Thank you. Senator Gasalka, just for your information, I've been told that it's line 2.8 that generates the question as to whether or not there's a financial provision in this bill and what would that be. So that's the reason this has been flagged to be referred to finance.
Yeah, and Madam
Senator
Chair,
Gasalka.
If Mr. Kerr can just address that briefly first.
That would be good.
Madam Chair, so we've been in consultation with both the Board of Water and Soil Conservation Resources and the Department of Natural Resources, and we were asked for a fiscal note in the House of Representatives. When they completed that fiscal note, they originally did show that there was going to be an unabsorbed cost, but after consultation with them and reminding them that we've been doing this for 10 years, they agreed that they would change fiscal note to absorb the cost. So, yes, there are some, there's the potential for some outside technical support on the part of the DNR, but I believe they've agreed to absorb those costs within their budget.
Okay. And there is also, Senator Gasalka, there is a committee on veteran and military affairs in Senator Saxo's committee that will review all of these bills. So, any other questions? Senator Johnson.
Yes, I'm happy to ask Madam Chair and Senator Gasalka to answer my question. Do these landowners, they keep their land and have the usage of the land, but it is for a lifetime, or does it continue on forever unless they choose something different? And then, answer my question.
Yes, Senator Johnson, yes, the landowners do maintain ownership of their land. The easement is perpetual, so it stays with the land, irrelevant of the landowner. And yes, they could use it for recreation if they want to use it for agriculture, planting trees. They can still use it in current use. The whole intent is to limit the incompatible development, which is homes.
And Madam Chair, and
Senator Johnson,
do they have to abide by any special agreement? Other than that, do they get compensated for
the... They can establish and get other programs such as CRP and do other existing programs on their landscape, best management practices to better conserve their land. But otherwise, it's a perpetual easement and it lasts for... Oh, no, they're not compensated.
For the easement, they are.
Well, for the... Excuse me, ma'am. Yeah, for the easement, they're compensated.
Members, do you have any other questions? I need a member to move this bill on behalf of Senator Gasalka. Senator Anderson. Senator Anderson moves Senate File 74 to be recommended to pass as amended and sent to the Committee on Finance. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The bill passes. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
I understand that Senator Benson is here. Senator, welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Yes. Get my act together here, Senator. Thank you.
I have before.
Senator, you have Senate File 222.
Yes, thank
so
you.
Welcome, and please proceed.
Madam Chair, a couple of pieces of background information. My husband is a vet. We own a small business. And you have in your packets the checklist of things that we had to go through at the federal level in order to become a veteran-qualified small business. It's quite cumbersome. And so when this legislation was presented to me that simplified the process, I thought, well, the very least we can do for our veterans is to make their lives a little easier when they start a small business and decide to work with the state of Minnesota. So if you ask yourself, what does a veteran mean? It's someone who's served and been honorably discharged. Small business, we've defined in statute. Owner, somebody who owns a majority of the business, a majority of the shares. So this bill works to simplify the process. No submission of cumbersome tax returns, filling out forms, no hours on the phone with Washington, D.C. We'll just do it right here in Minnesota. It is focused on the 9/11 vets. And members, you are well aware of this. Our post-9/11 vets have an unemployment rate higher than our general population. As of last November, they were at 8.8%. They disrupted their careers. They disrupted their lives to serve our country. And so now let's take this opportunity to help get them back on track, to help make sure that they get the opportunity to live out their dreams after they've taken time out of their lives to protect our country. Small business ownership will give them a little help in that direction, and they're going to be more inclined to hire fellow vets, which will help reduce that unemployment rate. So this is an opportunity for us to get vets back to work. Let's see, the other provisions of the bill, preferences set up for counties and for cities. The Department of Administration in February stepped forward and established a veterans preference for Department of Administration contracts. And so this follows a similar policy to what has already been established. And with that, members, I do know there are a couple of people who would like to dissent on this bill or voice some of their disagreement with the abbreviated notice. I didn't have the opportunity to sit down and work out all the details, but I have pledged to them that I will work on the details if this committee decides to move the bill forward. And I'm sorry, we do have an advocate for the bill, if you would allow me, ma'am.
Thank you, Senator. Could you articulate a little bit what are the issues that are of concern so that other members kind of get to understand what they are?
Madam Chair, and the testifiers are welcome to come forward and put a finer point on these issues as we just met in the hallway. But 6% preference for veterans brings some concern about costs for the cities. And there are other private entities who are concerned that once again we're creating a carve out for a special category of individuals. And so those would be the two primary concerns that have been brought to me. I know they've been working with the House author, and we simply didn't have time to work out those details before this hearing, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. And you have a testifier?
Yes, ma'am.
Welcome to the committee. If you could please identify yourself before you start.
Yes, ma'am. My name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm the United Veterans Legislative Council Vice Chairman, and I'm involved with the Military Action Group, which is House and Senate individuals trying to put together veteran things. I'm also the equity representative for the new Viking Stadium program. And really, I was the one who got this thing started because it's needed. Right now, the only way that you can get into the Vikings stadium process is that you have to go through a preliminary process of going through the VA system. Once you get the email from them that you've met their pre-qualification, then you've got to go through their whole process. In order to do that, by the time you got your certification, you would not be able to be eligible for any of the contracts that are being let because of the timetable that's involved. We decided that the best way to do it is to have Department of Administration to do the certification. They're already doing an equity program for women and minorities. This just copies exactly what that is, except that you got to go through this Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs, and they're working together as we speak to come up with an equitable program. Basically, it's the same qualifications that women and minorities have for their set-asides, and that works for both Department of Administration, any of their contracts that they give out, and MnDOT. Right now, the only way that you can get a MnDOT veterans contract is that you have to go through the VA and get that certification done, which in case takes many months. The equity program now, in some cases they say, well, it's going to cost me 6% of our contracts. They already have to have that if they're going to get a state contract for women and minority. You're just adding another entity on it that has the same qualifications that women and minorities have. It's a more equitable way of doing it. We're always trying to, in the state of Minnesota, make sure that veterans are taken care of. And this is just another way to do it. Right now, we're in the process of trying to... the bill was passed last year, but there was no money to it. We want to be able to get that taken care of this year so they can still get into some of the contracts for the Viking Stadium, which would be nice. But then there's also the other state, county, and township and city contracts that are going to be letting for these veteran, minority, and women company or organizations that they, too, will be included in it. So when they say that there's going to be a 6% increase, well, they already have that for women and minorities. You're just adding one more entity to it, which is veterans, and we're trying to make Minnesota more veteran-friendly.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Senator Hayden.
My name is Jerry Kaiser.
Sense of what the demographic are, what the racial and gender demographics are of the veterans community.
Well, right now, the Department of Transportation has 149 veteran-owned businesses that are trying to apply for their project. We identified 1,500 companies that said that they were veterans. However, we don't know, in fact, that if they are truly veterans because we didn't get to see a DD-214. Right now, the Secretary of State, if you sign your name on the dotted line, you want to be a business, there's a little checkoff that says that, yeah, I'm a veteran. Well, you have to prove that. You have to have 51% ownership of your company. You have to make the decisions. Like she said, there are criteria to do that. And we're being equal, the same as women and minorities. There are organizations that are waiting for this to happen so they can get their process going.
I'll check on that one, too.
Senator
You're
Benson.
You're talking about women, minorities?
Yeah, so, Madam Chair.
Senator Hayden.
I was just wondering, within the veteran community that you know of, do you know what gender or racial breakdown of the veterans are? That's what I was trying to
Mr. Yeah, that's really interesting. I never really cared. They're a veteran. There's a veteran. You know, it didn't matter whether they're black, white, or purple. They did their job, and that's good enough for me.
Well, Madam Chair,
Senator Hayden.
I want to be clear. I wasn't trying to distinguish them from that perspective, but I think that one of the things that I've been hearing, and I respect veterans and concerns myself, but what I'm just trying to get is the balance as we put preferences in. How does that work out? Because one of the things that I've heard from some municipalities that, excuse me, Senator, that may or may not be relevant to your bill, but that often we're unable to meet some of the other preferences that we're looking for because veteran preference will kind of bump them ahead of them. So what I've asked this question to them and people haven't been able to tell me is that as we look at this mix around equity, I was just trying to figure out maybe there are half the people or a third of the folks that are veterans are also women. So that kind of helps us with the issue we have around underrepresented communities such as communities of color are women in business as well. So I wasn't
I have an answer to that.
I was trying to get some sense of the universe.
Thank you. Mr. Kaiser, if you could briefly comment on that.
I can only just briefly state what's happening with the Viking Stadium. 13% of the people who are got the Vikings contracts for the $1.3 billion project are minority. 9% are women, and right now 2% are veterans. So there are obviously more minority and more women-owned companies than there are veteran-owned companies at this present time.
Thank you, Mr. Kaiser. Senator Benson, I have a question about the language that you use. In Section 3, as you see, Subdivision 2, it says the county board may establish a program. The language that is used throughout the chapter is a may, but in your language, you specifically ask the counties to must establish, and then you also go in Subdivision 10. I presume people from Rochester will be here for the DMC. You are asking them to must award, so it's kind of a directive. It is not, so I think that's kind of one of the questions I think that was brought to my attention, that when you have a directive that says you must award, it places a significant directive from the legislature, and I think that we're going to have some people testifying on that issue. I don't know if you could explain what was kind of the intention when you use directives from us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is one of the issues, the controversies that was brought to my attention as we were coming to this hearing. And I did want the language to be very strong. We are trying to play catch up. But out of respect for the work that has been done before, I would be willing to change it to a may so that we are not tipping the scales too much in a particular direction. If the testifiers would like to come up and speak to that, and if a member of the committee wanted to offer an amendment, Otherwise, I have pledged that I will work with people as this bill moves forward so that we can get the language in order so that we're consistent and respectful of processes that have gone before. Again, I would like to establish a preference, but I don't want to tip the scales too far.
Thank you, Senator Benson. It is my belief that change will help you move forward more expeditiously, because the must requires certain processes to be established that apparently are costly and quite legally cumbersome. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just was wondering what the language says right now for women and minorities as far as the counties and the cities. I was wondering, Mr. James would have that information. Is it a must that the county set up a provision that they have to consider minorities and women in their bid and contracting?
Senator Anderson, we are ahead of you. We're in the process. I just ask the staff to help us do the research. So I don't
Thank
know
you.
If you're ready, but they are, if you don't mind, they are looking into that. I had exactly the same question. I didn't know. Which is, they look into the chapter for previous language, and we found the May, but they're looking into that. So we'll get back to you.
Okay.
I think they're looking into that. So if you could get us that information, that would be very helpful.
I don't know if we'll get it right now.
But. Okay.
Someone from the cities.
Okay. Apparently we have a testifier that may be able to help us, but they are working on that as well, Senator Anderson.
Thank you.
So do we have other testifiers in the audience who wish to give us, share your wisdom? If you could please.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Identify yourself.
And members, my name is Patrick Hines. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Cities and counties do have a long history of hiring veterans, especially in our law enforcement community. It's really a natural fit for veterans to come into city or municipal service. And at the League of Cities, we do a lot of work with our members to make sure that current veterans preference programs are implemented in a way to ensure they accomplish their goals. So we are familiar with these issues. And I appreciate the opportunity to comment on the bill. First of all, the main portion of the bill has to do with the certification process that currently, as I understand it, involves the federal government, and we don't have a position on all of those changes. They certainly seem like they would streamline the process for our veterans, and our concern has to do with the language that Senator Benson mentioned earlier, and I certainly appreciate her willingness to consider amending the bill to make the language requiring the veterans preference make that language may instead of shall, so that cities and counties would have the option of doing that, which is the current law. One of our concerns with how it was drafted in the shall is that it might not give cities very much flexibility in how they would establish a program. The current law that it references in Chapter 16C establishes a 6% preference. Many times cities using lowest responsible bidder statutes will use evaluation criteria in addition to the cost, so they will award points based on a contractor's experience, for instance. Points can also be awarded for having a company owned by a veteran or having a company that employs veterans. So we think that permissive language is better because it gives cities more flexibility in how they may want to administer a program. And I would also just note that the provisions for the county, which are in Section 3, and the provisions for the city, which are in Section 5, are different. And the reason may simply be because they have to be put in different sections of statute. But the language in the county section in Section 3 gives a little more flexibility, and we would prefer that language to the language that's in Section 5. But again, we have been working with the House author on this bill, and I appreciate Senator Benson's willingness to work with us, and we'll certainly continue to do so. I know this has to go through at least one other committee, so we'll work on that. And I'll stand for questions if people have any. Thank you.
Thank you. We Totally appreciate it. I have Senator Anderson. Staff has informed me that the May is the language that is consistently used throughout the contracts, so we don't use must. So if Senator Benson is willing, we can change that term here, and then you can continue to work, Senator, as you move forward with kind of seeing how the two versions could come together. But we could definitely change that particular word right now if that would be your preference. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifier, I'm wondering what the hiring practices now are for minorities and women in the cities and the outer portion of the state of Minnesota. What percentage of women and minorities are hired by local?
Mr. Haynes?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, I would have to look. If you're talking specifically about in contracting, it would vary from city to city because it is permissive now, and so some cities would have a different program than others. If you were talking about general hiring of city employees or talking about contracting, either way, I'd have to get back to you. I don't have that level of detail on the top of my head. Sorry. Yeah.
Madam Chair.
Thank you.
To the
Senator
testifier, I would like to have that information, please.
Mr. Haynes, I think it would be appropriate, I presume you know this better than I do, to at least give us a little bit of what I understand is that there is no city, including the city of Minneapolis or St. Paul, where we have kind of some of the highest numbers in terms of contracting companies that actually meet any of the percentage criteria that they have set out for themselves. So we have a long way to go in almost every area of business. It is my understanding. I don't know if Mr. Haynes, I understand why you don't want to dive into specific numbers, but I think overall you can give us an idea of how far behind we are as a state and cities in terms of contracting with minorities and hiring minorities. I think that's a struggle of the state of Minnesota, whether the reason is that we don't have enough people in business or we need certification process. There is a lot of conversation about how the certification process is so cumbersome in general for everybody, including veterans. But I presume you can give us a little bit of an idea.
Madam Chair, members, I'm not trying to be obstinate about it, but I really don't have that level of data, and I feel uncomfortable sort of making a guess or a generalization, which might not be very accurate. But I will get information and can bring it back to the committee.
That's fine. That's fine. Thank you. Members, any other questions? And do we have anyone who wish to offer this amendment to change the language so Senator Benson at least is done with a little bit of Senator Scalzi? So Senator Scalzi moves to amend the bill so that we have some changes that the staff will read for us, if you could.
Madam Chair.
Ms. James. Senator Benson.
There was also a word omitted on page 3, line 11. I wanted to make sure that we caught it. After veteran-owned, insert the word small. So if it would be all right with Senator Scalzi to incorporate the suggestion.
Okay.
And that would be okay with
thank you, Senator. If Ms. James could read the amendment for us, that
would be. Madam Chair, members, on page 3, line 11, delete must and insert may. On page 3, line 11, after veteran owned, insert small. On page 3, line 24, delete must and insert may. On page 4, line 10, delete must and insert may.
Are members clear on that? So all of those in favor of that amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Any other comments, Senator Benson?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize to the committee for doing my work in committee, but I appreciate the accommodation, and I pledge that I will continue to work on this if the committee chooses to move it forward.
Thank you, Senator. No, I think that's what we're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So if a member is able to move this bill, I'll appreciate that. Senator Johnson moves Senate File 222 to be recommended to pass, refer to the Committee on Finance.
As amended.
As amended. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The bill passes. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
I don't know who else do we have in the audience.
Saxog is here.
Saxog. Senator Saxog. Here you are.
Here I am.
Welcome to our committee. We're sending you a lot of bills.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair.
So we have two bills before us, 338. If we could start with that, that would be great.
Very good. Madam Chair, members, today I'm presenting Senate File 338. This bill will make it clear that the location of the county in which personal documents are filed is allowed to be shared between governmental entities. This will ensure the internal database can be used by veteran service officers to locate the correct county quickly and get a certified copy in the hands of the veteran or their family so they can access services or benefits. With me today is Susan Anderson from the Minnesota Association of County Officers. She's going to give a brief presentation and help answer any questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Anderson.
Madam Chair and committee members, I'm a member of the Moms Association under the MACO committee, which is a state committee, Minnesota Association of County Officers. Under that, I've served as a chair under the Vitals Advisory Committee and a core team member on MOMS. MOMS is the Minnesota Official Marriage System. And the Veterans Association saw what we did with this program, and they decided that it would serve a gap in their program in identifying where DD-214s are located for
Ms.
veteran
Anderson,
service
if you don't
managers.
Mind, you need to say your name again for
oh,
the
I'm
tape.
Sorry. Susan Anderson.
Thank
with
an
MACO Association.
Thank you.
At this time, we were just looking at filling in a gap of missing information with the systems that the veteran service officers have, and it would fill in between the Korean War to 1978, including Vietnam. It would be a database, and it would be a priority for just veteran service officers. They would be able to look up and see where the DD-214 is find, which would is located, filed, excuse me, and that would streamline the process for the families and the vets to get their benefits.
Madam Chair,
Senator Pappas,
good bill. I'd like to move Senate File 338, and does it go to finance or can go to the floor?
I believe it goes to judiciary.
Sorry about that.
It goes to judiciary.
I'll move that Senate File 338 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the Committee on Judiciary.
Any questions? If not, Senator Pappas moves that motion. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Ms. Anderson. So now, Senator, we have Senate File 427.
Senate File 427, Madam Chair and members. Council informed me of an oral amendment we need to clarify which veterans camp in Minnesota the language is referring to. So at this time, I'd like Ms. James to help me out here, explain the amendment, and request if we could to have a member make the motion to move it on. Under the bill.
Do we have the amendment?
It's just oral.
Oh, it's just an oral amendment. Sorry.
It's okay.
Okay. Ms. James, if you could clarify what the amendment is.
Madam Chair, members, on page 1, line 9, after the third occurrence of the word the, insert Big Island Veterans. And this is so that it's clear which camp this section of statute is referring to. This has been a problem that's been sitting in this section of statute since it was enacted, and we can clear it up here.
Big Island. Are people clear on that? Could you read that again, Ms. James?
Page 1, line 9, after the third occurrence of the word the, which is right before the word camp, insert Big Island Veterans.
So it will read Big Lake.
Big Island Veterans Camp. Yeah. Read.
Okay. Are members clear on that? Could you move that motion? Who's moving that motion? Senator Eaton moves that motion. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill makes technical changes, removes obsolete provisions, and amends the statutes governing the Board of Governors of the Big Island Veterans Camp. With me today is Dean Ashman, member of the Minnesota Veterans for Veterans Trust Fund Board of Trustees, and he's going to give a brief presentation and help answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator. Welcome, Mr. Ashman.
Mr. Chair.
If you could please say your name before you start and proceed with your testimony.
My name, again, is Dean Ashman. I'm a member of the Board of Trustees for the Veterans for Veterans Trust Fund. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm going to give you a little bit of a brief history and background leading up to the formation of the Minnesota Veterans for Veterans Trust Fund. In 1923, Big Island became the Big Island Veterans Camp after previous owners had gone into debt, and the park was dismantled. And in the early 1980s, the state of Minnesota took control after it had gone into disrepair, and after a few years, put the island under the control of the Big Island Veterans Camp Board of Directors, a nonprofit organization, and put a statute in place, one we refer to here, Statute 197.131, 132, and 133, in which the board would be made up of two appointees from the Military Order, the Purple Heart, the American Legion of VFW, and the Disabled American Veterans. That veterans camp struggled over the years. In the year 2004 and 2005, due to increasing liability, the governors voted to sell the island to the city of Orono for $5.8 million. $3 million came from the city of Orono, $2 million from the state legislature, and $0.8 million from the Minnehaha the statute required that if the island was ever sold, that the funds received would be put in an irrevocable trust, and a new board would be put in place to oversee and manage that trust. I'm a member of that board, and funds were to be used for veterans projects in the state of Minnesota. I just remembered it's Minnehaha Watershed was the other point.
District.
After the trust was set up, the new Board of Trustees were charged with the oversight of the $5.8 million. The statute also required that the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs be a part of involved in the trust management and have the final approval of any grants. During the year 2005, the Board of Trustees put in place a trust agreement, a set of bylaws, and also selected Wells Fargo Wealth Management investment management firm, as well as a manager of the grant process and a consultant to advise us as we went forward. Since 2006, the board has met monthly to review grant applications and review investment portfolio performance. Since January 2006, we have granted over $1.4 million while still retaining the $5.8 million. We have done well in our investment and granted to Minnesota Veterans Projects $1.4 million. Commissioner of Veterans Affairs is a very active attendee at our meetings and approves all grants. Recently, we revisited our bylaws, trust agreement, and the statute, and that really brought us to this point. We're here today to ask you in the statute, repealing portions that no longer apply, and that because they're obsolete. We would like to note that we'd like to add to the statute a statement. And that statement is the trustees appointed
by the four organizations shall have the exclusive authority to remove a trustee of the trust established in statute. A trustee may be removed at any time without cause upon a majority vote of the trustees and the consent of the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs. We're simply asking so we can effectively govern the organization that we are charged with taking care of. We have a fiduciary responsibility and care in the organization, and without the ability to maintain continuity and so forth, oversight from the commissioner, which ensures that our are in the best interest of the veterans broadly. At the same time, we value the four veterans organizations appointing the members to this board of trustees because of the diversity that it brings to our board, and it has served us very well.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Ashman. Any questions for the testifier? Any questions for the senator? If not, Senator Eaton moves that Senate File 427 be recommended to pass as amended and sent to the floor. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Bill moves.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you. Thank you. Members, that concludes the business of our...
Oh, we have two more bills?
I'm sorry. Senator Anderson has a bill. I thought... Senator Anderson, my apologies.
I think that was a joke.
She was just holding back.
I will have them up.
Yes.
Wait, I have a bill.
Yeah.
I just see that. This bill, I think, went into the office of this committee. I don't know why.
Okay. So mine already is updated.
Okay.
Sorry, Senator Anderson, I was just getting clarified. You wanted one of your bills in, not the other one. I thought that Senator Anderson did not have a bill, but yes, I do. And I do have a current agenda in front of me. I was just not reading. So, Senator, you have Senate File 362 before us. You could proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I've got many people with me that this bill has been brought to the committee last year and made it all the way to the Rules Committee and passed out of rules, and we couldn't move it over in the House side, so we're bringing it back again to have another opportunity to bring it before the membership of the body of Senate, and hopefully the House will be able to push it forward. The Honor and Remember flag is designed and was put in place to support families who've lost, who member, veteran, have given the full measure of their life to protecting this country. And it is a personal flag that basically shows their name, their rank, and when they served the country, and is basically asking for the opportunity to have it recognized. It's been recognized in 38 states across the nation, and we're asking for the state of Minnesota to at least recognize that this is a flag, not to take any discredit away from the American flag, which we fly every day here in the state. This is a personal flag for those individuals who, as I've already mentioned, have given their full measure of sacrifice to this country. Madam Chair, I do have an amendment that to put the bill in the way I'd like to have it, and I haven't had time to really look fully at all the verbiage in there, but at this time I'd like to offer it the A1 amendment. Ms. James helped me put this together, so I'd like to have that added to the bill.
Thank you, members. We have that in our package, and this is an author's amendment. So Senator Anderson moves the A1 amendment. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And with that, I'd like to, instead of my talking, I'd like to have individuals who are supporting this and who are involved with the giving of the flag to those families who have lost loved ones testify on behalf of the flag and the legislation before you.
You're welcome to the
committee. Good afternoon. My name is Pat LaBelle, and I am on the board of the Minnesota Chapter of Honor and Remember. Madam Chair and members, thank you for allowing us to speak today. My husband and I met George Lutz back in 2009 in Ogden, Utah. His son had died 4 years earlier in the Battle of Fallujah. After his son's funeral, George visited with other Gold Star families to try and cope with this loss, and found that all the families had two things in common. They worried about if their sacrifice was in vain. They worried that the nation would forget their fallen hero. George did a lot of research and talked with legislators in Virginia and found there's never been a universal symbol dedicated to those who made the ultimate sacrifice in service to our country. Thus, the Honor and Remember flag was born. Mr. Lutz spent a year designing the Honor and Remember flag. There is a section in your brochure in the information you got today under flag symbolism, which will tell you what the colors and symbols mean. The flag that was shown here just a few minutes ago is the generic flag that we would like to see flying at all the state buildings, if we could. The Honor and Remember flag recognizes all individuals who died as a result of serving in the U.S. military from the founding of our nation to present day. It serves as a symbol of national gratitude and remembrance for Americans who paid for our freedoms with their lives. This is the third year we have come before the Minnesota State Legislators asking for the flag to be adopted in Minnesota. Previously, we had a number of Gold Star families come to the hearings to testify about what the flag means to them, and today I am here representing them. There's a very small, specific group of individuals who disagree with this flag, and it seemed like the main objection was that this flag has a trademark on it. Annan Flag Company was the first major flag company to be allowed to make the flag. Several other flag companies have also been granted the trademark. The reason is lessons learned from the POW-MIA flag. It was not protected by a trademark, and because of that, not only did the design fluctuate, but they were made all over the world, including China and Vietnam. The trademark for Honor and Remember is not held in anyone's name, and everyone involved in design have legally released all rights. It is of utmost importance to protect this symbol and prevent it from being altered or produced outside the United States. Included in your packet you received is frequently asked questions on the flag, which addresses most of the common questions they've been asked, and a letter from the Vice President of Annan Flag Company addressing issues that were brought forth by the aforementioned group of individuals. And also a press release from this past November awarding Honor and Remember with the prestigious top-rated 2014 nonprofit award. To date, the following 18 states have adopted the Honor and Remember flag: Wisconsin, South Dakota, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, North Carolina, Louisiana, Kansas, Oklahoma, Arizona, Utah, Oregon, Missouri, South Carolina, New Jersey, Indiana, and Texas. The states of Washington, Mississippi, Georgia, Colorado, and Kentucky have endorsed the flag, and legislation is pending in 22 other states, including Minnesota. This is a picture of one of the early flag presentations we did in Southwest Minnesota. The families are presented with hand-sewn flags with the name of the fallen hero, the date of death, and the theater in which they died. Donations are used for these flags, and our most generous donors have been American Legions and VFWs. The Minnesota Chapter of Honor and Remember has given out almost 200 flags. The picture of the 19 families was taken at our Apple Valley American Legion presentation in 2011. George Lutz flew in for that, and Governor Dayton also came and spoke. I am asking, please do the right thing and endorse this flag in Minnesota and let these families know that their sons, brothers, and fathers will forever be honored for their sacrifice and never be forgotten. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lavelle. Senator, you have other testifiers. Please proceed. Make sure you identify yourself before you start.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm a disabled Vietnam combat veteran. I did volunteered for two tours in Vietnam as a helicopter crew chief and machine gunner. This flag has really come close to home. I'm going to send around a picture here of Major Reed Nannen. He is a F-18 fighter pilot. He was killed March 1st, 2014. He was a wingman of my son-in-law, who's a F-18 fighter pilot. And just this last year, when they had the Marine Corps marathon in Washington, D.C., I'm starting to get a little emotional about this, his family was there. And we sponsored Minnesota Vietnam Veterans Charity, that I'm the executive director of. We sponsored a couple of Marines to run in that race. There was 27,000 of them. And right there, you'll see that picture. It goes around. The flag was presented to Sarah, his wife, who was running in that marathon, right at the spot where there is a picture of this particular Marine, Major Reed Nannen, a decorated fighter pilot. It was very emotional for that family. They had no idea what it was. You can see his name embossed on the bottom of it. And, you know, Sarah, who I've met before when I traveled to Japan to meet my son and my grandson. Her father, I mean, she received the flag, the burial flag at the funeral, but her father, who was Reed's dad, her father-in-law, did not get anything. And he was the champion of their family. And when my daughter presented that flag to Sarah, she immediately gave it to her father-in-law, and he cuts that all day long. So the only thing that he had, he says, my daughter-in-law got the flag to put on her mantle. He says, we got nothing. They both live in the same town, and this is it really was closure to this family, and this all this is. There are hundreds and hundreds of people. I lost men and comrades in Vietnam. I never had an opportunity to give them a flag. That they're long gone, 40 plus years ago. And this is something that's really needed for many of the families here in Minnesota. What do we have, 60? I think they've given out 100 in the state of Minnesota, and they're all embossed, and it's a beautiful thing. And we just think that Minnesota needs to be one of the next states to sign this bill into.
Thank you, Mr. Kaiser. We really appreciate the picture. We thank you for your service, and thank your family for really being part of all of this. I think this is very important, and thank you for sharing that with us. We have another testifier.
Please.
Thank you very much.
My name is Ron McAdams. I'm a Vietnam combat wounded veteran. I also have a cousin of mine, Lyle McAdams, who is still missing in action in Vietnam. So I have a lot of strong feelings about this flag. I believe it was about 5 years ago when George came out here, Pat. Anyway, at that time, we were able to present my cousin Lyle's daughter and his family with one of these flags, and it was quite awesome, quite awesome. I have personally been involved in presenting several of these flags, mostly here in Minnesota, but to a Vietnam veteran out in South Dakota who'd been killed over in Vietnam, and also down in Arizona a couple of years ago. We made a couple presentations. So as a Vietnam vet, I feel very strongly on this flag. It's something that like I say, it just gives the families closure, and that's something that they all need to have. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony and your service. Senator, do you have any other testifier?
Madam Chair, not at this time.
I have a list, but I'm not quite sure who is here. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Ralph Donay. I'm Chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council. I served in the United States Marine Corps for 30 years. I get emotional about this also. For many years, I saw the flag presented to our fallen veterans' families. And many times, as Jerry had stated, the mother and the father really didn't get any recognition because the flag went to the immediate family, whether it was a son or a daughter or a wife. They got the flag, and the rest of the family was just kind of out there. I think this is something that we need, and especially with Minnesota being as proud as we are of our military, this is something that we need to be able to help with that closure, that loss that the families had to endure because of what their son or daughter did for our country. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you. Thank you. Members, do you have any questions, any comments? Senator Dahl?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the testifiers here today. I do remember that this bill being presented last year, I believe it was, and Senator Anderson, we still don't have endorsement from the Legion or the VFW. Is that right? Do you want to comment on that at all?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, I have not had the Legion come to me or the VFW come to me this year to say one way or the other where they are staying. I know that they're taking, there has been some change in venue because of what they thought this was going to take the place of the American flag when an individual was fallen. We clarified it as much as I could last year when they came to my office, but when I, as far as putting this again back into legislation, I've not had them comment back, or the Commander's Task Force hasn't gotten to my office and said we will be testifying against it. So unless they're here, I'm not aware of a testimony against the flag per se.
Thanks.
We are not aware either. Senator Johnson.
My question is, do you know the number of people in Minnesota who have died in the wars since they kept the record? I don't know how long they kept the records.
Do you have that?
Is that available?
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, I'm sure it is available, but I don't have it at the tip of my fingers. Maybe somebody here, one of my testifiers, could answer the question.
And Madam Chair, if I might.
Yes, Senator Johnson.
Since we're telling stories a bit, my brother died in World War II in 1945, so that was 70 years ago.
Oh, wow.
But I remember I was only 4 or 5 years old, and I remember when my mother and father got the notice, and it's still... is in my, just vividly in my brain, in my head, that my father, we were on a farm and my father just started rolling, and he's not an emotional person, and he was rolling on the ground and just absolutely devastated, because he was only 18 years old, and their oldest son, and so, I was thinking about that. Mm. It still touches me, and I don't even really know that I remember anything else when I was 4 years old. So.
Mr. Kaiser, did you have a comment?
Yes, I'm Madam Chairman, members of the committee. During World War II, I'm the person who does the honor flights in the Twin Cities. I take World War II and Korea veterans to Washington, D.C. to honor them, both the live and those who have passed. I don't know how many from World War I, but... I think 69,000 from World War II, Korea. It was over, I could be wrong, a couple thousand. My war, Vietnam, 1,158. There's many who passed away and died during the peacetime years, if you can call them peacetime. Mm-hmm. And then
I believe it's 62 National Guard and regular military from the state of Minnesota. But I'm not sure if that includes all the active military or not. So there's thousands and thousands. And theoretically, all of them could get a flag, too. But that's the only numbers that I know of.
Thank you for helping us do this and move in this direction. Senator Anderson, if you are ready, I think we can move the bill, and it needs to go to finance.
Madam Chair, I would like to move Senate File 362 as amended to be passed and sent to finance.
On that motion, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted.
Thank you.
I think I'm not okay. I have to apologize, members, but I had a surgery of my eye, and so I can see half, and I'm confused. It's incredible how your brain works, that when you don't see very well, you're kind of spaced, too. So hopefully next week I will be doing better. Thank you for all of your work, members, and we will announce the agenda for next Wednesday. I do not believe we're going to meet on Monday because I need to get my other eye done, and hopefully I will be seeing you well after that. So thank you, and we will adjourn for today. Thanks.